This week, we kidnapped one of our listeners and are holding them hostage for content. Jokes aside, this is about to scare the pants off you and then potentially scare them back onto you. This week, we're sitting down with Ross, one of our listeners, to talk with them about a series of encounters and experiences they had that I guarantee will leave you with as many questions as goosebumps. I didn't see you there.
It all started early this morning.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot, UFOs, cryptids, true crime, paranormal, and more.
I've always wanted to see a UFO.
Oh, I was researching for your entertainment.
That's Bigfoot's guess.
He basically wrote the book on modern cult.
We aren't really comedians.
What if Buddha did cocaine?
The Addams Family on meth.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 91 of the Black Cat Report. My name is Gil, and I'm joined with here today by a direct descendant of a love affair between a banana and a postage stamp, Joey.
That's right, the Black Hand Society and the Society of the Banana. Thank you for having me again for episode 91, right?
This is mutually our show, but yes, you're welcome for also being here. But today is not about us, Joey. Not at all.
It is not.
Actually, but our very special guest, Ross. Ross, thank you so much for coming on and welcome to the Black Cat Report.
Thanks for having me.
Woo! Yeah. Now, Ross, you reached out to us on Instagram recently, a handful of days ago.
Right.
And we chatted for a little bit. You started to share episode ideas and suggestions. And in one of those suggestions, you mentioned something that perked up my ears just a little bit. See, one of those suggestions you mentioned was the Pale Crawler.
Mm.
But not just that, you mentioned that you had what you think might have been an encounter with one, or at least something similar.
Right. That's the best I can figure out what it is. It doesn't quite fit into that, but it's the closest I've found.
Totally. And we're about to hear that story here in a little bit, because you also then went ahead and you shared a link with me to your story, which you had posted some 6 months ago, I'd say, on Reddit.
Yeah.
Well, naturally, like with any listener suggestions or any content anybody throws at us anytime, I always dig in and I always read it and I always look at everybody's stuff, right? Well, like I said, I read it, and let's just say that's why you're here today.
Yeah.
So what I did for this episode was I went ahead and I pre-recorded reading that full story. It's a lengthy story. It's in detail. Got your approval ahead of time that it does accurately represent story as outlined.
Yes, definitely.
If it's cool with you, I'd like to go ahead and hit play and let everybody hear it.
Sure, absolutely.
Awesome.
Excited to hear it.
Okay. First off, I'm not sure this is a crawler. However, that is the closest thing to it I can find. It seems to share many similarities with them, but I don't know. I'm interested in thoughts of what it may be. Note, this all happened a long time ago, and the dates and my age are to the best of my recollection. I moved to a rural area in the North Georgia, Alabama mountains. Sand Mountain was the name of the place. It was connected to Dade County, Georgia, but right over the state line from Higdon, Alabama. I was around 8 years old. When I first got there, it was a total culture shock having moved from a large urban area in the Southwest. I vividly remember driving through a virtual sea of green right outside of Atlanta. The novelty, the trees soon wore off, and I dove back into a book to stave off the boredom of a long drive to my new home. At some point, I started to feel really uneasy, so I told my mom. She wrote it off as a symptom of a major life change or something to that effect. I did my best to just accept it as nothing more than that, but the anxiety and sense of oppression got a lot worse. It seemed that the heavy feeling directly correlated to the proximity of my new home. It was a feeling that I would live with for more than a decade, and I would soon find out that it was nothing in relation to what I would soon experience. I can't say how long it was until it started, but it had to have been a few months after we moved into a little trailer at the end of a long driveway in the clearing of the woods. Our closest neighbor was well over a mile away. My room was on the opposite end of the trailer from my mother and her husband's room. I had a huge bay window, which will be important in a minute. So it all started kind of odd one night. I couldn't sleep despite being tired from exploring the acres of woods that I now resided in. So I'm lying there, Cartoon Network playing in the dark while I'm trying to fall asleep. Very suddenly, I'm deep in the woods on the southeast of the property. It was a place that I had been before, but not really much, although I did recognize it. It was the strangest feeling, like being a passenger in another's mind, seeing through their eyes, but having no control, just along for the ride. It was disorienting, to say the least, and exponentially worsened when whatever it was started to move. It was an unnatural speed, predatory and precise, kind of reminiscent of the way an animal would stalk its prey, darting from cover to cover, tree to tree. It was a blur until it stopped again, just giving me the time I needed to regain my bearings as much as I was able. This only lasted for a few seconds before I snapped back to my own body again, laying in bed. It was such a strange feeling, and I didn't want to even think about it. I didn't want it to be real. The next night it happened again. And the next. And the next. After a few days, I realized that each time it was for a bit longer, and it definitely seemed to allow me to see through it for a little longer each night. Can't say how long this lasted, but it was long enough to be a commonplace event every night. One night I was coming up to the clearing that the trailer was in. As I realized, my consciousness was in this thing's mind to some degree, and all-consuming sense of dread started to rise up in me, worsening with every brief pause behind cover. Note, thinking back, this thing didn't seem to operate in any sense of time and space that we are accustomed to, because it would pick up every night in the same place that I left its mind, or whatever, but I don't think it was just frozen there until the next day. I think it was playing some sort of game or something, kind of like when an orca plays with a seal or a cat with a mouse. As my terror reached a crescendo, I was suddenly ejected back to myself. I don't know if I did it or if it killed whatever link it had made or what, but it was definitely different this time. I sat straight up and turned towards the window. I just knew that it was there, that it was a few feet outside of the tree line. As much as I didn't want to, I still gathered myself up and looked out the bay window at the tree line. It was there, leaning from behind a large tree right at the edge of the woods. It's very tall, and its skin was taut, like it was stretched over its bones, but I don't really remember any detail of its skeletal anatomy. All its features were grotesquely elongated, like they were stretched out purposely. It had long, clawed fingers that curled around into the common sign that you would use to beckon someone closer to you. Its face was large and humanoid, but with that same stretched-out look. It had a smile that was impossibly wide, and large, long, sharp teeth, skinny and needle-like. Its eyes are really big, even for its size. It just stood there, staring at me through my window, cocked its head, and motioned for me to come to it. I call it the Gray Man, although it had no discernible gender. It was an animal terror unlike anything I've ever felt, but I found myself having to actively fight an almost uncontrollable impulse to go out to it. It was like it could almost compel me to go with it to the forest. After what seemed like forever, I was able to pull myself away from the window and crawl back into bed. All I could do the rest of that night was wait for it to get tired of waiting and decide to come to me. It never did, and when the sun finally came out, I couldn't feel it anymore. This was the new normal for me. Almost every night, it would come back and wait and watch. The compulsion lessened eventually, though, which was the only real silver lining. I stopped sleeping a lot and would spend the nights in the living room as much as I could, which wasn't often. After quite some time of living with this thing appearing all the time in different places, it got closer at night. I don't have a total memory of this night exactly, or I guess I should say that I don't have a complete memory. I think I gave it away for something else. After being plagued by this thing for quite a while, it was really getting to me. I wasn't sleeping, which affected a lot of other areas of my life. This connection with a tumultuous environment was quickly pushing me to a breaking point. One night, I awoke to this thing, something different, perched on the bottom railing of my bed. The only way I can describe it was kind of like the fawn from Pan's Labyrinth. It looked much different than that character, but it's as close to an analog as I can come up with. It told me that it would get rid of the gray man, but for a price. The fawn had a different energy to it than the gray man did, but I don't think it was something that was of good intent. A mild, almost predatory opportunism at best. It was, however, desperate and exhausted, so whatever it wanted from me, whatever price it required, I paid it. It did indeed keep up its end of the bargain until I ended up accidentally opening the door for this thing to re-enter some years later. My life did return to a kind of normal, well, in some ways.
Whoa. Wow. Okay. Did you ever find out what it wanted, or did you ever, do you have like a theory of what the gray band that you're calling it wanted or what it was doing?
You're talking about the thing that like took it away or the actual gray man itself, like what it wanted?
The actual gray man itself, what it wanted. Did you ever find out or have an idea?
No, not really. I've heard several, like when I started sharing this experience, like, that was why predominantly, because it was something that stuck with me like throughout the years, and I wanted to know more of what it was, if like I was the only person that saw it, if this is kind of a unique thing, like why it came to me, like, you know, I have my own theories and I've heard a lot of other people's, but no, like really I don't know exactly, like, and it doesn't seem to fit any specific archetype or any specific monster or fae or of anything. It's just kind of, it's a unique thing, so I don't know, other than being just some sort of like fear-eating predator, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's the theory that the crawlers are actually like predating on individuals, like actually eating people, and it's part of some of the disappearances. It could be that also during this time period, like my theory is like during this time period, I was going, like, there's the home life was just terrible.
Uh-huh.
Like there's a lot of really bad stuff that was going on. So I think that's what pulled it in initially.
Uh-huh.
It was just like the depths of that, you know, I was isolated in the small area I'd never been to, just moved there. And then, like I said, like, you know, bad home life and all this stuff. So like, it was like a beacon, and it saw like the same thing that like a sick wildebeest or something, you know, out on the Serengeti would be. It's kind of the same idea. So it came to me, and this is where I'm not really sure. This is where kind of have conflicting ideas, but there's one of two options, I think. The first one being that the second thing, the fawn thing that kind of came and got rid of it, was a separate entity in its entirety. Where it came from, I don't know. But it saw an opportunity somehow and took advantage of that. Or the second thing was that they were either two parts of the same creature or working in tandem as some sort of like small pack thing to one, you know, one goes through the whole like the, what would you even call it? Like a prelude to, you know, increasing fear, increasing, you know, stress and anxiety and all that stuff to the point where the other one can swoop in easily and take what it wanted to and, you know, share it amongst them or whatever. Those are the two ideas I have with that. But I have a friend in the UK that I had read over some of this stuff, and she thinks that the fawn thing was actually a slightly like a different version of this Gaelic god or it was a fae thing, but that was more or less like it was a protector of children. And I mean, there's just a lot of theories, but I really don't know. That's part of why I'm sharing this, is just to find out if someone has some information, if you guys know something, or if we can find that one little thread that can, you know, lead to something, a breakthrough, that would be great. I'm kind of lost myself.
Yeah. And thank you so much for allowing us to share this and for coming on and talking about it. Like, yeah, seriously. Thank you.
I know we said that up top, but I'm going to say that a million more times. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I appreciate you guys doing it. Like, I mean, any more possibility to get that information is tremendously helpful to me. And it helped me actually close like a chapter of my life, or a good chunk of a chapter of my life that has bothered me for years. So
totally.
It means a lot to me as well.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah. So again, with your permission earlier in the week, I did share your story with a couple trusted folks ahead of time to kind of get feedback, to get ideas, to kind of help pursue things.
Sure.
I'm going to tell you off the bat, complete blank slate across the board. That doesn't mean, publishing this episode won't help get answers, which is a kind of a major call that I would like to put here. And just as you came across earlier episodes of our show, the 5, 6, 7, 8 months, a year after, we published them, once this episode's out there kind of like in the wilds and getting listened to, it builds up steam, it builds up momentum, and I do sincerely hope somebody will hear it and at the very least be like, oh shit, that happened to me too.
Right.
And like connections can start to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, most definitely.
Obviously, in a perfect world, somebody pops up and they're like, hey, I wrote a book about that. That would be fantastic. but this is also doubling as a call out to listeners, to anybody that comes across this, to hit us up, to reach out to us. There's always links to connect to us in the show notes.
Please do.
The Black Cat Report. There's two things on the internet with that name, and they're both us. So you'll find us.
Contact at blackcat.report. Instagram,
yeah.
TikTok, anywhere you can find us, reach out to us and Gil will respond.
Pretty much any, Ross, you can attest, I'm awake at 4 in the morning like, hey man.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I think it hit you up like in the middle of the night or like it was some random time and like 5 minutes later your response, I was like, oh shit, I wasn't expecting that, but all right, cool.
I have a list of questions from folks.
Sure.
But there's something that I really have to just nail this point down here.
Sure.
What stood out to me the most, more than anything, which I've not been able to find a single goddamn reference for anywhere, is the switching of perception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is, and I really hope, listeners step back and think about this. Anytime you have acts of possession take place, it's always a one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the demon, the entity, the spirit, the whatever the hell it is, goes into the human, treats the human as a vessel, right? But it is never, ever, ever, ever the demon forcing or the entity or the creature or the cryptid, again, I'm just throwing out demon because that's the closest thing I can say to a complete and utter, taking a perception on and, like, making a body into a vessel, right? It never goes the other way. I can't find a goddamn reference to it on the internet anywhere. For a human being able to see through the entity's eyes and experiencing what the entity's experiencing. Now, the closest things I can think of to that would be the regular movie take on a werewolf where the person wakes up the next day and they're like, holy fuck, my head hurts. What was that crazy dream I had last night? I can't, and then they start piecing together, oh shit, that farmer did die. And oh, that's why I thought about bloody overalls, There's that. That's not the case in this situation because you snapped out of whatever this perception switch was, right? Snapped out of it, went up to the window, and saw the entity, saw it, right? Saw the gray man standing in the woods.
Yeah.
So you're not a werewolf. Good news.
Usually a positive thing.
Yeah. I mean, tomorrow is a full moon on Easter. So like you would have had a hell of a night. But just chasing bunnies. but yeah, so it doesn't match there. And it doesn't match with the intentionality of, say, like a familiar, right? Which is a very like, you don't just accidentally have a familiar. That's not a thing. Familiar might come into your life, but the actual like process of growing closer to it and making some sort of connection, and like if you really want to push that out to its farthest limits, being able to use it to go out there to like basically get information for you or follow up on things for you, stuff like that, is a very intense intentional practice that I'm sure at 8 years old you weren't involved in. I'm just gonna assume on that one, right?
No, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So other than that, which doesn't even come close to this, this switching, which you said, like, not only increased in cadence, but also increased in length of, like, the amount of time you were taken over to it. There's nothing like that.
It also, when I mentioned that, like, it kind of picked up where it left off before.
Yeah.
Like, I think part of, like, it was really weird. It was kind of like almost like a symbiosis sort of thing. Like when I was seeing through it, it was like it was adapting to what I handled perception wise. So I mean, I'm a little kid for one. And then like on top of that, like this is a completely fucking weird, crazy experience. And for anybody, like nonetheless, someone of that immaturity and age.
Yeah.
It was almost like it kind of catered to me more, like to allow me to see, like to see stuff or be able to perceive things. It wasn't just this jumbled mess of like sensation. You know, does that make sense? And like, you know, where like the way that it operated in time and space was different too, because like I said, I don't think it was like staying in this like static placeholder or anything like that, but it somehow was able to bookmark that experience or at least like feed me the necessary memories or perception or whatever to kind of buffer me into its eyes again. And like when it started moving, like I got the feeling that it wasn't able to slow down much more or not move like that. Like that was its natural way. It didn't know any different. It was really weird. There was a lot of emotions to it, like especially in like when it first happened. Like it was scary because it was new and it's fucking weird. But like as it happened more and more, it was like it was trying to feed that fear into me and like make it increasingly more frightening and more like, which like it was almost like a method of a way of controlling something, which is really weird. And like I had never thought that, you know, being in the opposite direction before that, it was never something that really occurred to me. But yeah, it was a really strange experience. It's very hard to explain, but yeah, it's something to think about for sure. But
I think about that, and like I think about when your perception switched to, and when you got up in your room and like looked out the window and saw the entity. I honestly cannot imagine if you were still in the perception of the entity looking back on yourself through the window.
God.
That would have been horrifying. I think that would...
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Way to make this worse, Joey. Thanks.
Sorry. But like, I just...
Thanks, Joey. This is why he's here.
So this is me thinking of it, and then just you being out in the woods in this perception for just this little extra amount of time. You look back and see yourself in the window, and then you're just like, well, this is a... So I'm glad. I'm really honestly glad it didn't happen to you. Sorry to put that in your head. But...
No, it's completely fine. Like the furthest that I got, like I could, when it started coming up to that clearing, like, you know, you can tell the difference in the moonlight coming through, like, you know, not having tree branches and stuff. Like I knew it was coming to that clearing, and it seemed very familiar, but it didn't get to that point or that degree. Cause I mean, like, dude,
thankfully
it would have fucking shattered part of my head. I'm pretty sure my mind would not have responded well to that at all.
Yeah.
So, thankfully that did not happen.
Yeah.
Otherwise I may not be sitting here having this conversation at all for sure.
For sure.
I think we would both be in padded rooms, but your walls might be a different color.
Right. Than the ones that I've got around me. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
Damn it, Joey.
When you, I have another question too for that perception part of it. Like, do you feel like you could control any of the like movements or when you were in the entity, right? So could you control anywhere you looked, or was it just like you were saying, was it just feeding you information that it was trying to give to you? Or were you like moving and you were just like, okay, cool. I see the clearing. I see this.
Yeah. Were you a passenger in the car or a driver?
Yeah.
It was.
Or a mixture of both.
I never thought to control it. Like I never thought to even try to change anything or do anything. It was just like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on type thing. But like, you know, kind of thinking back on it, like it was very much almost like a merging of the two separate consciousness. Like I could feel what it, like I could feel part of its intent, and I'm sure it got way more shit from me than I got from it. But like I was able to, I mean, it was kind of like, it was like watching shit. The way, only way I can really explain this is like, have you ever been in a dissociative state?
Never sober. And that's just honest.
Okay. Well, have you ever taken ketamine?
No.
Like for medical reasons or otherwise?
No. Okay. I mean, I've done a fair number, done a lot of drugs, and like fair number of psychedelics, but I've never done ketamine.
Well, ketamine and PCP specifically are dissociative drugs.
Yeah.
Like, so it's the closest thing that you are going to get to, like, having, like, that kind of out-of-body experience. But,
yeah.
And so I'm trying to relate it to something that somebody would be able to, like, kind of understand.
DMT?
See, DMT is like being somewhere else, to me anyways. It's like when you go through the veil.
Yeah, you don't even remember that there is another, there is a somewhere else. You're just there.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a different universe. Like, yeah. After you go through that veil, True. It's just completely different.
True. But
where this is kind of like, it's like watching a movie, like watching someone else's life through their eyes. But it was definitely able to tailor, like, the feed of information that it was giving me. But, like, I can kind of feel like when it started getting faster and its movement started, like, the really, really rapid muscle twitch stuff before mm-hmm. you start moving, before you burst into it. Like, I can kind of still remember a little bit of that. Like, it's very, very small amount. And, like, it wasn't something I even never thought about it. And so I'm sitting here trying to, like, think back to how it was. But it was just for, like, a second or two, because most of, like, what it was doing and, like, the way it was moving and, like, it's completely foreign, man. It's like, it's a different thing entirely. It's not like, uh-huh. It wasn't like being in a person or, like, you know, anything like that. It wasn't like being in your own body. It was different, but it was as close as you could come to being in something else's body. But, like, you know, after a certain point, everything is kind of static, and that static was replaced by whatever it was whatever it figured out that it could replace that static with. Like, it became like an overload state, and then that overload state was replaced by stuff that it consciously chose to replace it with. If that makes sense. That's the best way I can really describe it. I'm hoping this is, you know, making sense.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, you know, metaphors and, you know, even you know, use of different substances and stuff like that, drugs, what have you. Like, the point of these questions is to kind of, like, dig in and help understand. They're not to have you know, cookie cutter answers that are already prepared to. None of us came into this episode with that, you know, planned and stuff like that. So, like, this is supposed to be hard to answer.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, and you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Would you ever consider regressive therapy, hypnosis?
Yeah. I mean, like, this was like a traumatic thing for me for a little while.
Yeah.
And, like, it still is to some degree, but it's not like, the drive for understanding and, like, moving past it and just really kind of, like, you know, filling in a lot of that information that's not there, that, you know, that fuels me more in what I want to do. Like, I'm pretty open and willing to try anything, or, I mean, within reason, obviously. But yeah, I would absolutely do that. Like, I mean, if it's potentially a step towards getting some answers, then yeah, most definitely. And I'm sure, like, you know, in the instance where it was sent away, the other thing sent away, like, there was a big block of my memory from that. Like, as vivid as everything is around that, like, even other memories that, like, on the periphery of that, right? As vivid as those are, there is a big chunk, like a big black mass of memory that's gone. Like, it's literally been surgically cut out of me and taken. Uh-huh. And that's what, like, you know, and I want to be able to get some of that back, because I don't know how. If memory is, like, you know, it goes down to the electrical impulses, right, in the brain, right? So it can't be just completely destroyed. It would have to be changed or suppressed in some way. So theoretically, it should still be locked in my unconscious, subconscious mind somewhere. So it should still be able to get back into it, especially since, like, you know, if I did make a deal with this thing and it did go away, like, there's a good chance, and it came back, I mean, even though it was still partially my fault for that, like, I mean, it kind of was it's a thing, but it didn't go away permanently.
Yeah.
So I think that whatever safeguards there were that were made to keep that bargain or whatever active are probably dissipated massively.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would like to be able to get some of that back, as I guess what I'm trying to say, long form answer of that.
Yeah.
I was thinking on kind of pigging back on what you were just talking about, like, just before we went into this question, about, you talked about how when you're in the entity of, like, subconscious, about feeling like you were, like, it was preparing to get to run, right?
Yeah.
So thinking about, like, in our human, and, like, as, you know, as we are now, we don't think about walking. We don't think about getting our muscles prepared to move, to get into like a walking pace, a running pace or anything. We just kind of do it. It's kind of in our subconscious. But say if you were in another entity, which you are not familiar with brain function, you're not familiar with like muscle function, anything like that. Maybe at this time looking into it, you had so much going on because you were seeing all of it.
Yeah.
Instead of just like in our brain, we suppress the subconscious. So everything's like done almost automatically in a way. Our brain does it. I'm sorry if I'm taking a question away from you, Gil.
No, not at all.
But, I feel like maybe in this situation, and maybe thinking about what could have happened is like all of this subconscious was open to you. So you were feeling the muscle twitch getting ready to move, every little bit of detail surrounding you and whatever else this entity had was flooding into you because you were brand new to it and kept doing it. And eventually, like you're saying, you kind of like started drowning out that outside stuff with like more stuff that it was feeding you, right? Is what you're kind of talking about. So I feel like maybe that's what it was doing.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, like, you know, the human mind, like it blocks out, like, you know, all your organs move around constantly, for instance. Like, you know, when you're moving your body or twisting, you know, like, you know, fucking raising your arm, it still has like, you know, an effect on even your internal organs outside of the muscles and stuff. And all that is repressed by your mind. So it's got to be similar in other beings. But yeah, it was very much, that makes a lot of sense. It was very much like feeling all of that stuff. And I mean, like, you know, there was very little control that I had over it. Yeah. So it was like when it realized, it knew I was there, but when it realized that it could affect me, it ran with it. It definitely more and more and more, like it definitely started feeding me stuff, which like, you know, when it's like having, it's the difference between having like a, like an encoded message versus having like a well written out sentence. You know what I'm saying? Like it's very much easier to digest the sentence versus like, you know, something that's art encoded and a lot more complex. And so that's why I think that it was very easily able to feed me that information. And I wasn't at all like trying to fight it or anything. I just didn't know what the hell was going on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think was happening to your body?
I have no idea. Like, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. I would assume The only thing I can do is basically make assumptions from like later in life. Like I started getting a little bit into like astral projection, and I've not done that in many years. And there was only a very brief time period that I did, and that would be the only thing that I can kind of liken it to, or assume that like the body kind of went into brain started going into like what beta was it beta waves or delta. I can never remember brain wave patterns, but anyways it dropped down from what it normally is, and then you kind of like breathing is suppressed and like you basically are in like a semi-comatose state. But I don't know. I mean, like I really don't know, because I mean this is just all, you know, a while, a kind of a guess based upon later experiences, because I really don't know. It was like when it happened, like I could have been in this thing, like riding through this thing for hours. I mean, I know it was the space and the distance that it started running or started making its way to the window, because that's what it was always beelining it to the window. The time that it would take wouldn't take hours. It'd only take maybe, if you were going that fast, it would take like 5-10 minutes. I mean, it was about a mile, 3/4 of a mile away, but it's how it was moving was so rapid.
Yeah.
And so like just unearthly crazy. It would have taken like, you know, very little time. But it was like stretched out, and that may have been because of so much information being like fed into me, or so much stuff that, you know, you normally don't have. Like your concept of time is like massively distorted.
Yeah.
But like when you go back to your body, and it's kind of the same way when you end a trip, like that trip seems like it goes on forever, but it kind of condenses back down when you're back in your body, because your mind starts filtering out that excess. So you're able to digest what just happened to you to the best of your ability. That's kind of how it was. Like when I snapped back to myself, like I could still, like the more it happened, the more I was able to feel it, that it was around outside of myself. That there was still a connection, but it wasn't the same kind of connection. It was more of an ambient background connection. But as to like specifically, I don't know. I really don't know what happened to my body. I mean, this is the best guess I have.
So there's a distinct vulnerability that takes place with quite literally bringing somebody into your perception, right? That is a very distinct vulnerability that the entity, the creature, whatever, you know, is giving you access to, at least in my mind.
Yeah.
It's saying, this is my world, right? Like, that is but basically possess me.
Yeah.
You know, like in a loose sense. I mean, you don't have full on control. You're not out here, you know, ordering credit cards in its name or anything. You know, right. Like you ain't got. Sorry, I had to break the tension for a moment. But
I mean, I should have, man. I probably have some better credit. At least around.
So people are gonna listen to this episode, immediately go out and start trying to possess demons. Demons are gonna be like, these humans are a problem.
Right. It's gonna be complete 180. Like, mm-hmm. You're gonna have demon churches that are like gonna be
finally.
Like, you stay away from those humans.
Entire Catholic Church confused
yeah,
by
exactly.
Monday. They're just like, we don't know if we support this or not, actually.
Who do you think Experian Credit is run by?
Oh, that's a good point.
Damn it, Joey. Always coming in with the hard hits. No, but okay, so one of the folks that I ran your story by, they had a take on it that I didn't have at all, which was basically they didn't think that the pale crawler looking entity was evil, at all.
Yeah.
They didn't think that it was evil because it was trying to, in their understanding, it was trying to show you its world. It was trying to get you to experience life through its eyes. I don't know if I agree with that at all, but we do have the introduction of a second entity, right? That like comes in. So, like you said, you know, early on, maybe they're related, maybe they're not related, maybe they're working in tangent together, almost like a emotional extortion racket.
Yeah,
right? You know,
pretty much.
Basically, that's what it is. Where it's just like beat the shit out of you, and then the nice folks come in and they're like, "Damn, really suck if you keep getting the shit beaten out of you. If you pay us this, we can make sure it doesn't happen." Turns out that the person that beat the shit out of you was actually working for the person that you just made a deal with. You know,
yeah,
like.
We had literally talked about this the past few weeks.
Yeah, but there is a certain vulnerability, right? To it being like, hey, this is what I'm out here doing. This is my life. This is what's going on here. I don't know. What do you have any thoughts on that? That was just I argued forever with this other person. I was like, I don't know, because at the end of the day, that entity is forcing itself into another person's body, which just mechanically and technically and on any moral scale, never okay to do without someone's permission. So,
the only way that I could think that would be a possibility is like if I did something or like I was somehow in an area that it took interest in, whether it be just me specifically, what I was around. I don't know. Anyways, I'm in an area that it finds interesting for whatever reason. And through it, like getting into some sort of parameter or something happened, and I was able to accidentally trip and fall into its fucking perception somehow.
Yeah.
How that happened, I don't know. And it wasn't expecting that, and it allowed that to continuously happen, but still was trying to preserve its autonomy by introducing the fear thing, or if the fear of stuff like is perceived differently for them. Like if they don't really, the emotions that they pick up on or the emotions that they deal with or that they run on are different, or they just perceive it different. Like, you know, like they only have a very select or very small area and like emotionally in which they can kind of relieve and comprehend. And that was part of it. I mean, that's maybe the case because, it scared the shit out of me and it made it very
naturally
uncomfortable. Like, but it may have been a fear, like, you know, a fear, not necessarily a fear, but a response to kind of play, you know, put up a boundary. Because like when it finally got to the window and stuff, like it stopped and it had that smile and it just sit there and it was just like doing the, you know, it was like trying to get me to come to it, you know?
That's never a good thing.
I know.
That's never a good thing you want to see.
It's creepy as shit, but I mean, but the thing is, there's no reason that it shouldn't be able to just come and get me.
Yeah.
And there's no reason that it shouldn't have been able to just do more. Like, I was outside. I didn't just stop going outside. I didn't just, like, you know, hold myself in the room. It could have done other things. Like, it had opportunities, you would think, to, you know, exploit other weaknesses to, you know, do whatever the hell it wanted to do, whether it be eat me or feed off more fear or whatever it wanted to do. So, I mean, I guess that is a possibility. Maybe it was trying to allow me the autonomy to come to it, to be able to, like, I don't know, open up a dialogue. I really don't know. I mean, like, that, it's, I didn't get that.
That's,
if it's a being that, like, if it's a being that had no ill intent to me, but existed in some sort of sphere of negativity or something that we would think as negative, but had no animosity to me, I could see that. But as,
mm-hmm.
like, the only other thing that anybody's ever mentioned that I've ever really thought about with any kind of depth was someone had mentioned that it may have been a part of myself that had been, that I had projected out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was almost like, it was still fundamentally me, but it was kind of like similar to how people have dissociative identity disorder, but more of like a
mm-hmm.
Metaphysical version of that. Like it was
like, mm-hmm. like a associative identity disorder with a tulpa, I guess, almost, where it's like a thought creation or emotional thought creation.
I mean, that would make sense. I mean, it was, they didn't exactly explain it like that. And it didn't seem to me like that was the case, but I mean, it's the only thing I can really link it with. Like, cause I don't see it as part of myself. It wasn't, it didn't feel familiar at all. It was extraordinarily foreign. And like, I would think that even in the cases of, dissociative identity disorder, like you still have an underlying feeling of a relation to your alternate personalities and whatnot, because I mean, all it is like the splitting of different emotional and intellectual necessities, you know, like anyways, so, but yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. But I mean, I don't know it, but yeah, it may be something that just it lives and like operates in a sphere of what we consider darkness, like, or being it may have been a demon, but a demon that didn't have any ill will towards me and just was like, holy shit, like, why can this person do this stuff? Or why is this happening? Why do we have this connection? Like, let's explore this. And like, hey, do you want to like find out why we're doing this? Why this is going on? Because I don't know and you don't know. So let's try to figure it out. But it's also a demon. So that's like fucking terrifying. Just because it is what it is, you know?
Well, you know, like, again, it, like, one of the, I guess, the linchpins, right, on this whole thing, which stands out to me so much, why the hell would it make itself so vulnerable as to show you its world through its eyes, right?
Yeah.
And in the lead up to this thing appearing at the end of your bed and offering to make a deal with you to get it to go away, which, like, other than the intense emotions of like fear and terror, which I would argue, and feel free to 100% correct me, because I'm only speaking completely externally here, so you can be like, no, that wasn't it. Totally cool. How the fuck could you be 8 or 9 years old experiencing this kind of this perception switch, right, into a creature running around the woods?
Yeah.
And not feel complete terror and fear and oppression to the likes of which you've never experienced before. That seems like an actual, totally normal, healthy reaction to something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So part of me wonders, because the thing, as far as I know, the pale crawler-like entity, the Gray Man, never actually did anything bad.
True.
It just existed and actually showed you the world through its eyes, right? And it actually was asking for you to come to it. Now, on the flip side, the Pan's Labyrinth looking like fawn, you know, like type entity that like popped up in your room, A, was invading your space physically, and B, forcing you to make a deal.
Yeah.
Right? Wait. That was an entity that actually did appear and wanted something from you.
Yeah.
And not just wanted something from you, but was
going to take something from
you. Yeah, it was going to take something from you
in a way,
based off of your vulnerable situation. So I don't know, like, it, to me, like, it stands to question that I was like, you know, like, how do I put this, the devil's gonna show up in a suit and a smile, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, they're gonna walk in and be like, hey buddy, I can make things easier for you, after they just fucked your entire world up. You know, so like, I don't know, you know, I don't just want to go out here and blame every ugly, creepy looking thing and be like, ah, you're exactly like you look. You know?
Right.
You know, I don't want to do that. You know, like, naked mole rats, ugly as fuck, but they're actually very nice little creatures. You know,
I mean,
you
know, it's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was just kind of like, hey man, want to play? This is the only time my parents let me out of the house. You know, like, we, you know,
I think,
I don't know.
I think you actually, you probably, that, I think that's probably pretty accurate. This, I think it's very true. I don't know any for sure on anything, but that sounds more reasonable than like a lot of things so far. And the reason that I say this is because like when it came back, it did so in a far less intrusive way. And I'll kind of get into that a little bit more in a minute, but also the second thing, like the error about part of what it took was really fucking dark, like really sinister in a fucked up way. And like, I don't really get into a lot of detail about it, but like in a way and shit that I shouldn't have been at that age aware of, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know exactly what I traded, but it has that feeling about it. So that would make sense that was actually more the opportunistic, like evil or a bad thing, quote unquote, in this case, whereas the other thing wasn't. And like, it may like, you know, as to why I was able to see through this thing's eyes initially, I think it was just by happenstance. And then it kept that open, that bridge open, just for whatever reason, I don't know, but I think that's kind of how it, you know, it just was kind of a one in a million or one in a billion sort of thing to happen in the first place. And it just allowed it to exist. And then maybe it wasn't the evil thing. Maybe it was just, you know, curious or whatever, because later on, like when it came back, like there was a bunch of other shit that went down that like just opened up this entire world of like fucking paranormal weird shit, like a whole lot of weird shit just coming flooding back in. It was literally like turning on a faucet or opening up a floodgate of paranormal crap. And when it came back, I would see it like driving down the road, because I was, you know, I was like eight, nine, right around that time period when it first came. And like the next time I saw it, like I was in maybe the end of sixth grade or like seventh grade, whatever, however old you are then, because I am bad with time. And also I didn't go to school for like a whole year, like in second grade. Mm-hmm. Like when I was supposed to be in second grade initially, I just did not go. So I was a year behind, mm-hmm. or whatever. So whatever age that is, like it's preteen, I guess. I don't know, maybe like 12, 13. Does that sound right?
Probably like, yeah. 11 or 12.
Is when I started seeing it again. And I saw it until I was like, I saw it up until like I was close to 20. And then like stuff that had, I guess the best way to explain it is like ripples of the stuff that had started, like, you know, when I was that age until like early high school, like still were affecting or having effects on my life, like into my early 20s, into like, you know, my maybe like mid 20s, the latest. But like when it came back, like one instance, I was 15, which would have been my freshman at high school, like I said, a year behind. So I would have been 15, mm-hmm. pretty sure. And it was me, a friend of mine, and we were going to this girl's house, and like she lived on the opposite mountain. Like there's a mountain, then a valley, and then a mountain where I lived. So like I'm in the back of this pickup truck.
Yeah.
And we're covered up in blankets and a tarp because it's fucking cold as shit. And it's like, you know, almost into the zeros or negatives and stuff. And we're going
country teenager shit.
Exactly. Yeah. And mm-hmm. as I'm going down the road to this thing, like I'm not seeing any of the property. I don't know. Like, I mean, I get on this girl's porch and she lives in this little house also in the middle of nowhere. And we get in there and like I start throughout the night, I start seeing, it's like I see flashes of this thing and like on her, and it's sitting in different parts of her property. And like we started having conversations that, you know, I went to the metaphysical supernatural area of things, and like I started mentioning it. I was like, dude, I have, you know, I kind of told her some of the story and stuff. And then because she was pagan, like she practiced like magic and different things into the occult stuff, and that was one of our points of mutual interest anyway. So I had mentioned it to her, and like one specific time this thing was sitting, he was sitting like perched kind of on a fence post. Like, and it was like the way it was set up, it was like, you know how like you have fences, but every so often you'll have like a zigzag bar of another fence. And like this specific fence was like,
yeah,
like only partially shaved on the outside, like where like it still had bark, a little bit of bark on that. I mean, like, so I'm explaining this and she's mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, that's over at such and such part of the property.
So there was a split rail fence post running along the property.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a fence, but like, you know, I'm explaining this. So it's sitting on this one thing by the split rail. Yeah. And then like, you know, I don't remember all the details to it, but I was able to explain. She's like, oh yeah, that's in such and such place. And then like, it would pop up again into my head. Like it was like, it was showing me like tableaus of where it was at, kind of. Like I did see it again later where it would physically be like outside of the house, but it wasn't necessarily being quite so like, there was no
looming.
Yeah. Well, there was less looming, but it wasn't so much of the of the like kind of like making you feel like you're compelled to do stuff. It was like just asking at that point in time. It was just like, hey, you know, come here.
Yeah.
Like not trying to influence me to do so. And I would see it like periodically. I mean, like, it was like weekly, if not like every couple of days. And this is, you know, during that time period, but there was so much other stuff that was going on that it was kind of a little bit drowned out. And I was like, okay, well, I've seen this thing before. I know what it's about. It's never hurt me. So it became like a tertiary concern. It wasn't like something that was really, I mean, it was there and it was still not great. And I didn't really want it to be around per se, but at the same time, it wasn't like I wasn't super worried about it because it never really done anything to hurt me at that point in time. But that, you know, thinking about it in the context of it, you know, just really just wanting to make some sort of connection for whatever reason that wasn't a negative thing. It wasn't trying to prey on me. It wasn't trying to have really any negative influence at all. That seems like it would make a lot more sense.
Yep.
For its later behavior. To me, anyways.
Yeah.
Because, like, I would be horrified if I was the first person in the world to see a pug, right? I'd be like, oh my God, this is the most hideous looking thing on the planet. Get the fuck away from me. And it'd be like, hey, come on, let's hang out. I'd be like, get the fuck away. Just punting the thing, you know?
Very true. That's true.
Be horrified. So, like, it, you know, is this thing just hideous and has all the symptoms of the Hallmark, like, spooky creepy? Right, that's gonna fuck you up, but it's actually a nice guy. Who knows? Like, and it's just like, hey, come on, let's go hang out. The moon's beautiful tonight. There's supposed to be a meteor shower, and you're like, what the fuck, man? You know, because again, the one that physically invaded the space and took something, like actually took something from you in an arrangement, was not that thing.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, I think you kind of answered one of the questions that I also had here, which was, did you always get an uneasy feeling every time you saw it? And it kind of seems like you got to a point where you were just kind of like, oh, yeah, that's Greg. No, I'm good. Nate, he's fine. You know, like you just kind of were like, yeah, I'm just going to leave him over there. Like, I'm aware he's there. I see him. But like, whatever. I got other shit to do right now.
Yeah, it is kind of similar to how it was. I mean, it was there, but it was very, it was very much background. Although I don't think I explained it like very well in when I wrote it out.
Okay.
Like that oppressive feeling, like the entire, like within like a like 30-40 mile like circle of where I lived, like both mountains, the name of the county is Dade County, it goes into like Higdon, Alabama, which is another county, but within, say, from the central point, which the little town is called Trenton, Georgia, if you were to draw like a line out both sides like 50 miles 50 miles, and then make a circle around it, like within that was like a really harsh oppressive feeling. It was like, I don't know if you've had experience with like really bad bouts of depression, like that kind of oppressive, like hopelessness. Like
I grew up in Northwest Ohio, so yes.
It was like it amplified that. It was like it was very much amplification of all things that are negative, and like that the weight of the world was just on your shoulders, and there's no reason for it.
Yeah.
The further away that you got from this place, or for me anyways, the better it was. Like it dissipated.
Just like Northwest Ohio. I totally 100% get
really?
You.
Like, I didn't know there was, I mean, I figured there was other places like that.
Yeah, well, they kind of low-key, but no, not in a psychical sense, but in the sense of like growing up when the Rust Belt was actually starting to rust in Northwest Ohio, it did get pretty depressive up there.
I could see that.
But again, trying to make light. So this was a paranormal nuke. Like a psychical nuke that was dropped on the area with almost like a radiation kind of like going through and permeating through life.
Yeah.
Where there was that sense of dread as you stepped and took the sphere and got closer to ground zero, if you will.
Right. And like there was a lot of weird stuff that happened in that area. Like it wasn't just my experiences exclusively. Like there was for virtually anybody that was around there or lived around there had their own stuff. Like there was friends of mine that saw the same things I did. There were like people that like lived more towards this one section, like where there was a cemetery, they called it Devil's Den for whatever reason. And like it was very, very common for like orbs of light to follow the cars out of this place and like to see like shadow people and to see like just, you know, a plethora of fucking weird ass ghost shit. A lot of like when I started going to high school, like there was these railroad tracks that were pretty close, like on my way home, well, on my way into town, my house was the opposite direction. But I would follow them usually to get to pretty much any of my other friends' house. Well, on a regular basis, we'd find animal corpse, like the carcasses of animals, like fresh meat.
Animal mutilations, yeah.
Yeah, it was animal mutilations. Like you'd find like, you know, great meat, like just, you know, completely fresh, just missing its head, missing like, you know, all or some internal organs, just laying on railroad tracks. I mean, dogs, cats, deer, fucking, you know. That was mainly the three, but there was other things, birds. Like you'd find like there's areas in the woods where like you'd come across occasionally. Well, this only happened twice that I was aware of, but like you'd find animals that were again mutilated, hung from the trees and stuff like that. There was this church that existed over there that was burned down for whatever reason. There's a lot of really negative shit. There are also like I haven't been able to completely corroborate this, but initially the mountain. There's same mountain, the Lookout Mountain. Lookout Mountain during like the Trail of Tears area, and also like the Civil War, and there was a lot of battles and stuff that were fought, and it was used as like a lookout point to see when there was troop movement and stuff like that, and campfires or whatever. But the indigenous Native Americans that lived in the area, like, were supposedly just rounded up and fucking slaughtered, like just mass fucking killing, which I mean is pretty par for the course in this country. So I mean, it was just a really lot of bad shit for a really long time, and it just festered in this place.
Can I ask, during this animal mutilation period that you were aware of, right? Can you give me a time span on like the exact like years, roughly, so I can save roughly from start to finish, so I can safely search in the middle, I guess is what I'm asking.
Okay. Yes, it would have been like 99-2000. That sounds about right. Yeah, because I remember I had moved from there right when 9/11 happened, and that was the beginning of the year. So yeah, that makes sense.
Gotcha. Okay. I just wanted to get those dates again. You know, part of what I hope with this episode is that connections and timing can be correlated with other folks. So kind of getting it around that new millennium, like kind of like era, right? So the pre September 11th, 2001 era, right? Is kind of when this is all taking place.
Also, what we had a class assignment, sort of my friends and I that were in this one broad spectrum technology class.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while we were doing like old school camera, like VCR tape camera fucking videography.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
So I don't, if that, there is a tape that if it still exists, there are like two of the animals who came across on that tape. And like, I'll reach out to the girl that had the, whose equipment it was.
Mm-hmm.
And like it, there, you know, I doubt that it really still does. But if she by chance still has this, because I know her mom lives in the same place still, I haven't talked to her in years. If she still happens to be able to find that tape, then like you'd be able to see like it was for sure. There's for sure a deer on there, and I think there was a dog as well. Those two instances, like they put them on the track just to get rid of it, because as soon as the train hits it, it's gonna vaporize.
Yeah.
So and like we came across it while we were video like photographing, because I ended up like using, like, I made a video. Have you ever Cradle of Filth band? They're a black guy. Yeah.
Cradle of Filth, the band.
Our assignment was to make a music video. And so I was using different horror movies, mainly like Evil Dead and like some other stuff. And like we were like chopping them up to make a music video to, her Ghost in the Fog, I think is the name of the song. I can't remember. Yeah. Anyway, so I was making a music video. So I think I used actually some of the dead animals that we came across in some of that video. So it's on that tape, and here's the point. Anyways, that may be helpful as well. I don't know. I'll see if I can find it. It's a long story for something. It was a long answer for something that really wasn't asked, and I also don't know how helpful it is. But there
we're
you go.
Just chatting, man. We're just chatting. All good.
Appreciate it.
I can tell you that you should not Google Trenton, Georgia animal mutilations in the 1990s and 2000s.
Is there like,
don't do it.
Is there like step sibling porn that comes up? Like, what did you find that we shouldn't? Yeah, like I expect
that literal thing. Actually, what you just
are you
said,
fucking
I think
with me?
Came up on
is
it.
You?
No,
oh my god! Why? It, what is going on?
Yeah,
in
I don't
want to.
I don't know. I don't know. But it's there's some crazy things. If you,
yeah,
it was like your search does not have a lot of like. I did see
I
in
pulled
in
that
19,
out of my ass, just like joking.
But
damn.
It's true. I did find in 2016 that they were. In Trenton, Georgia, they were looking for people who, or they were looking. They saw cattle mutilation, and they saw two cows. So it seems to be persisting there. If it's still going, you know.
There was also during that time period. Like I've not been able to find, but like one mention of it, in another case. But there was a guy. His name was Chip. Fuck, what was his last name? He was a guy. They had a pool hall for all ages pool hall in that area.
When your name's Chip, you don't need a last name.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
That's Chip.
I can't remember what it was. Okay, but this guy, we were kind of like acquaintances. I wouldn't say friends, but like we knew each other and we played pool a lot. He ended up murdering his best friend, decapitating and dismembering him.
All right, fuck.
And like his father found the corpse, the head was put into a bucket and he kept on getting people to try to go fishing with him. To dispose of this head in a bucket, like in a cement bucket, by accidentally losing it as a weight, and his dad, somehow his dad happened upon the rest of the body parts that were in trash bags, because he lived in a split house, he was in the bottom section.
This is a horrible plan, Chip.
Yeah, and he was a cool guy, but I guess he liked dismembering and killing people.
not a good.
They always are.
No, he was. He wasn't the smartest dude in the world, but yeah, that was another thing that surprisingly, that's pretty brutal for a guy that was, in his teens to still do in the late 90s and there'd be no real mention of it. Like you can still find a little bit.
I didn't see it. I didn't see anything about that.
The only way I found it is by finding an arrest record of somebody else that's in his family. And it mentions that happened in a local article or something like that. It was very hard for me to find it. But I can still ask friends and people I knew in that time period. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that happening. It's like, well, why the fuck does nobody else know? It was a weird town, dude. Really weird town. A lot of bad stuff.
Jesus. Chip.
Huh. Guess they never scanned that stuff onto the internet.
Yeah. Which is bizarre. But I don't know. I personally think it might be corruption, but
What?
Small town.
In small town America? How do you say?
I know. It's never would you ever think that would
never
be real.
Never seen such a thing. It's almost like our deflated crime numbers here in Asheville, North Carolina, in order to keep up the tourism industry.
They wouldn't do that. Never.
Oh, it's totally safe for complete strangers to come here and treat the entire area like Disneyland and just get shit-faced drunk and walk all around. Nothing bad will happen to you.
Sounds legit.
That's why we can keep increasing rent prices. So I guess to throw it in here, so the Bridgewater Triangle, speaking of Trenton, right, Trenton, Georgia, and this area right along the Alabama border, it reminds me a lot of the Bridgewater Triangle just based off of what you're saying, because the Bridgewater Triangle itself has a notoriously disproportionate rate of murders, of suicides, of divorces, of all the things that you would generally classify as whoa shit, bad vibes, going on in this area. Actually, in my day job in marketing, I looked up the keyword search volume, right? For how many times a month do people search this in XYZ location, right? Because that helps you figure out what the fuck to label your products and your services, because, you know for a fact people are actually looking for them.
Right.
Well, fun fact about the Bridgewater area. When I looked this up about 2 years ago, the top searches at the time in Bridgewater and the surrounding neighborhoods and towns in the Bridgewater Triangle area were florists, divorce lawyers, and garage door repair. for some fucking reason.
It's random.
And if any three things can tell a story, I'm going to say the fact that by tens of thousands of more searches than grocery store, cafe, sushi, you know, anything, like, the top searches in this town were divorce lawyer, florist, and garage door repair. I'm just going to say a lot of issues at home is what I was picking up
on. Yeah, most definitely.
That tells a story.
Yeah. It's
kind of to just assume.
A little more back, like, a little, okay, if you want to know, like, or put, just to put an extra cherry on the subject of, like, how fucked up this area was.
Please, yeah.
After the Civil War, right, when the South lost, and, like, everyone's like, okay, well, you know, they got their asses kicked, obviously, like, we can't have slaves anymore, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
Trenton, Dade County was like, no, fuck that. We are going to secede for the entire country.
Oh, no.
And form the country of Dade. They tried to secede again after the South lost. Yeah. Also, like, dude, it's like, it was a sundown town up until, like, the early 90s. Like, when I was there, like, they still had large signs saying that I'm putting a much more pleasant spin on this.
Yeah, please do.
It's like, if you are of a certain, if you have a certain level of melanin in your anatomy.
If you don't look like printer paper with no ink, get the fuck out by sundown.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And there was two huge signs, like, going, not on the main roads anymore, but on the back roads. And, like, I'm like my dad's side of the family is Mexican and my mom's white, and I look very white. So I wasn't too worried about it, but I did have issues with, like, my middle and last name sound very Hispanic. And so I did have issues with, like, people there because of that, like, and during school and things like that. It's still, in the 90s until I moved, like, it was still like that. It's not so bad probably now, but it was definitely an issue. It definitely caused a lot of problems.
Ross, I'm going to 100% say that, you know, not knowing a goddamn thing about the complications of what was going on with you with schooling and stuff and why you missed a year, I completely understand why you would miss a year in that fucked up little town. Like, Lord knows I would not want to go to school.
You were
a person of color living in a sundown town. Like, not a good situation, my man.
Yeah, it was.
That is rough.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. And, like, there was a few other, there was, like, my friend's family, he was half Filipino, but, like, he lived there his entire life, and his dad's family was from that area, right? So, like, when I came in, I moved to that area, and I look pretty white. I'm very white passing. So it was like I snuck up on him, which pissed off a lot more people in a lot different way.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, that caused problems. It was just all kinds of fucked up, but I appreciate it either way. It was not the best of places.
Yeah.
But a lot of fucked up weird shit happened in that time period, it was just a little background as to what's normal stuff that was going on, how things were normally received without the supernatural element.
Well, like, I wanted to say that too, not just to acknowledge the fact that, like, something that we've always acknowledged on this show is the fucked up institutionalization of, like, racism and, like, history in this country and across the planet. In a lot of other countries, there's intricacies that we don't understand. You know, we, the royal, don't understand looking out at other cultures in the world, right? So go to Morocco and you have racism against the Berber, right? You know, you have the Uyghur population. In China, you have, like, every country's got its fucked up shit.
Yeah.
That's never an excuse for it, but that's something that we always do, I guess, just like to acknowledge here, is that sadly that does, at certain points in history, make the world go around more than it should, right? In terms of, like, how that rolls over top of people in their day-to-day life. But I want to acknowledge that, right? Because folks are hearing about you and we really appreciate you becoming open with, like, aspects of your life, talking about your life, talking about, you know, things that a lot of folks can find very difficult to talk about, such as, you know, having your perception switched into an entity's body temporarily every single night for a long period of time, let alone, like, dealing with this shit in a day-to-day life. But we also have something here that I wanted to point out.
Sure.
And I'm saying this because I know how some folks might hear you saying that you got into more occult communities, pagan practices, things like that. Let's just say non-white Christian practices. I think that that's the safest way to acknowledge it, right?
Yeah.
Things that some would say was spiritual, others would say were a cult, right? Things of that nature. Guess what, folks? If you haven't learned by now, when you have paranormal encounters, paranormal experiences, UFO encounters, extraterrestrial experiences, guess how that impacts the rest of your life? All of a sudden, you got a real big interest in that shit because you've experienced it. And that's just the reality of it. I can tell you from my own personal, like, firsthand experience with, like, moments of incredibly intense high strangeness. After that, I started taking things like high strangeness a lot more serious. It's inevitable. You're like, well, totally ignored that until now, but fuck, I can't anymore. I should look into it.
It seems like there's two predominant routes when something like that happens to you. It's either like you completely reject and go further into your usually Christian or if you're from that persuasion, like you just delve deeper into that to hide from whatever as a way of just being like blocking it out or tuning it out, compartmentalizing it. Or yes, like you start trying to figure it out or trying to explore and trying to understand, you know. It's like dealing with a lot of times these are like traumatic events, and it's like dealing with any kind of trauma.
Yeah.
It's done the same way. It's either you embrace concepts that you may not have before, or you reject them entirely outright.
Mm-hmm. The same goes with, we've had Scott Tompkins on the show a good number of times, and the same goes with folks that are reporting Bigfoot sightings. Folks that could give a fuck less about Sasquatch and Bigfoot have a sighting, and they go one of two routes. They completely want to deny that shit, never want to talk about it again, and don't own up to it, or they become hardcore fanatics. And those hardcore fanatics, a lot of times, if you would have asked them 24 hours before the experience, they would have mocked you, they would have made fun of you, they thought you were a fucking idiot, they did da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da on down the line. But then they see some shit, and they are just as fervent believers, as they were deniers 24 hours earlier.
Uh-huh.
So, like, it tracks. 8, 9, 10 years old, you're experiencing this, you're seeing this, you're seeing through the eyes, you're, all this stuff. First off, incredibly important developmental time in your life, that's a thing. But, like, second of all, doesn't matter when the hell it happens, you're going to be like, what the fuck was that? Nothing in my life has primed me for this. And I just wanted to bring that up in the sense of, like, of giving legitimacy to it, because I know that some folks will hear this. And they're going to look back and they're like, he's crafting it because, he's even admitting to the fact that he was into this and da-da-da-da-da. And he's associated. It's like, no. I'm sure this 8-year-old, 8-year-old Ross was not out here reading, Aleister Crowley, and trying to initiate like moonchild rituals. Right. Like, pretty sure he wasn't doing that, but I'm sure that this experience led to him being like, what does Aleister got to say about this? It's going to open you up to it.
I definitely appreciate it. You're absolutely right. Like, I had no concept of any of that. Like, I was raised in a pretty conservative household and very much Christian, non-denominational, but very much Christian. So anything that touched or might have possibly been anyway not, even other religions outside of Christ, even regular other religions, but nonetheless, like the occult or anything like that, it was evil.
Yeah.
If you go by a shop and it has like one too many crystals, even though it's a geology shop, like it's still evil and they're still doing like witchcraft and like stay away from it. But I had no concept of it. It was like after this stuff happened, when things started calming down, it changed my perception of a lot, like the world really entirely. I remember being like a little bit younger than this, before I had moved from the Southwest, many years ago when I was very young, I remember being in a thunderstorm. I was outside a thunderstorm. It was me and a friend of mine. We were playing Ghostbusters pretending, you feel that energy from the thunderstorm. I remember feeling that, but it was like being able to feel that in the most mundane things, like being more in touch with a lot of stuff, because it just opened up some sort of channels or some sort of perception that I just didn't.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't have, or not that I think everyone has it. It's just that you're usually closed off, or usually you just don't have any necessarily need for that information. So it kind of opened up it acted as a catalyst to open up those facilities and and my brain that allowed me to perceive a lot of stuff that I didn't. And like, yeah, exactly. Trying to put, you know, answers to the questions that that obviously is going to bring up is what led me to, you know, reading the three books of occult philosophy or getting into any of the stuff, yeah, like reading on any kind of neo-paganist, anything in the metaphysics whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it caused a lot of problems, like, you know, with my parent, or well, with my mom specifically, you know, reading about this, having the stuff in general, having these books, doing any of that. So it was a cause and effect thing. It was most definitely not the other way around, or because of, you know, I was not seeing this stuff because I delved into that. I didn't know anything about it. So, but yeah, thank you for saying that. It's nice to, you know, because it's very, when I did start sharing this initially, just from people in general or being on the subject, whatever, you know, I did get that, and I'm sure everyone that does that shares stories that aren't necessarily of the norm, that they experience, like they get that, if they're lucky, like the, disinterested disbelief, if they're lucky in it, but like, you know, sometimes you're very unlucky and you're like, what the fuck is wrong with you type shit, you know? And that's never pleasant. Especially when, like, you know, it takes you a while to open up about stuff, and you know, you take that leap of faith to trust somebody and they just kind of shove it in your face, and it sucks. But you know,
well, Ross, thank you so much, honestly, for this. Like, when you were talking about how you know, you don't get to talk about this enough, or like don't get to feel, I guess, like in a way that you're like heard and not judged. Like, me and Gil wanted always and always want to provide for anybody that has experiences like these kind of things, is like, you can always talk to us about those things, talk openly amongst us, or and even like our people that listen to us, same thing. All of them that we know of are the same race. They're trying to listen. They're trying to understand as well. And like, life is full of experiences that nobody else has.
Yes.
And so that one person can get can broaden our horizons to everybody else. And it's what we like to hear and understand too, just, you know, like your experience with the two entities. And I want to say it like that because I feel like there were two separate entities in your experience and this. And we really appreciate you coming and telling the story, because like, as Gil said at the beginning, I had not heard this story. And he told me like a little tiny bit about it.
I mean,
and basically was like,
shit.
wear two pairs of underwear. Yeah. That's what he told me.
I did say that.
He did say that on a text message. And like, I said I would do that. I didn't. I lied to Gil.
He's
and
I am sweating so bad right now.
Yeah. But we really appreciate you coming on and telling us the story. We also do want to say that, like, if you get more, you start understanding more, maybe people reach out to you later on, let us know. Like, email us, and we could probably on like another episode, if like we find out more, we'll provide an update if that's okay with you.
Yeah,
or like,
absolutely.
You know, or like, or Instagram update or something. And we'll do the same if people reach out to us. We're gonna, you know, we really want everybody out there. It's like contact@blackcat.report, Instagram, TikTok, all the stuff, email, all the stuff. You can find us there. So if like you have had that experience,
if you found this podcast, you can find us on social.
You're very easy. Yeah. If anyone out there has had that experience, or even something close, or maybe has an idea, like something that could happen to them, or you know, a theory of it, just reach out to us as well, and we can pass it along to you, Ross, as well. So we want to obviously help you find clarity, I guess, in the ways like you're looking for, or even if not an answer, some sort of way to be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I appreciate the you know, the opportunity to actually come on here and talk about all this, and you know, you guys have made a very, very accommodating and very, I mean, you feel very comfortable, and you know, it's been very helpful. You know, it's cathartic at any time to talk through things that have been, you know, if not traumatizing, but hard or difficult, or you know, something that you don't quite completely understand, because every time you do, you gather a little bit more. And you guys have made that very easy and very welcoming, and provided a lot of insight that I wouldn't have thought about. And that's been what, you know, my main hope was in going into this in the first place, and that definitely did not disappoint. So it was great, but I appreciate it. Yeah. If you guys hear anything, like, pass along. If you want to do an update or anything, like, I'm more than open to it. So it's been a fun conversation, and I enjoyed it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. And like I said up top, man,
you know, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for, if anything else, also we always got to do shout outs at the end of the episode. I was already going to give you a shout out for reaching out to us at the beginning of the week and just saying, I just came across your podcast and I love it. And you guys are doing, you know, you were giving us all these compliments. And it was like 7:30 in the morning. And I was just like drinking my coffee, smoking a cigarette. And I was like, hell yeah, best way to start the day. This dude just reached out. He was just giving us all these compliments, just found us. And then it spiraled into us doing this interview, you know, like same week. So shout out goes to you two times, my man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it for doing that. And sure as hell going to talk soon. So thank you. Thank you, brother. Gotta ask one thing real quick.
Sure.
Is there anywhere, feel free to pick your brain, that you would like to give a shout out to? Any plugs, any pluggables, anything, even if it's just a good cause that you heard of recently, whatever you want.
St. Jude's, I did they had this walking challenge thing and I did like 2 months ago. It was walk or jog, it said walk, 60 miles in a month. I did that. Like I used to work with in children's psychiatric hospitals and stuff, so anything that can help kids, like, you know, figure it out. It's not hard. There's a ton of charities out there that always need just like reposts, or if you can help financially, whatever. Just, I mean, you know, the most vulnerable among us in society, like ours, you know, definitely if anybody's in need of help, then they are most definitely. And you know, a lot of kids get a shitty stake in life and a shitty don't get much chance. So if you can are in a position to be able to help, then, you know, just Google a little bit and try to do what you can to help. Anything matter. It all matters. It all counts. And it, you know, nothing else will make you feel good.
Hell yeah.
So.
Fuck yeah, man. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely.
That was perfect. That was perfect, my man.
That was perfect.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. My favorite thing to hate in the sharing process is, I believe that you believe.
Oh God, it's so annoying.
Like, oh my God, just strangle every person that says that. That is such a horribly like condescending, like, you know, it's like, hey, I'm atheist, and they're like, oh, I'll pray for you.
My God, I hate that so much.
It's like, man, fuck you, dude. Yeah. Like, go fuck yourself. Like, it's just, like, it's such a, and like, it, like, I could just explode with emotion about that.
There is no way that, like, someone that says that doesn't know exactly what they're doing. They may, like, tell themselves that they are not doing that, but they know that they do. How can you not? I mean,
some of them, because they are so, like, they have shoved their head so far up their ass that they can't even see anymore, because they're just looking into their own dark asshole. Like, well, they're just, like, up there. Like, they really are just so fucking, like, oh, no, I have the answer. Like, I'll do that. And it's, like,
That's still willful ignorance, though. Like, they're willfully being ignorant. Like, just because if you're willfully being ignorant of a range of subjects,
I think you could be brainwashed to the point of not being empathetic, or like trying to see through another person's eyes. Like, some of those folks, I've known some of those folks, and I'm like, if we don't talk about these subjects, you are legitimately, and on an action to action, like actually doing shit in the world, a very solid human being. But God damn it, if these points come up, you are the biggest douchebag I've ever fucking met, you know? And so it's like, it's hard, because I'm just like, well, you are like, you are, I don't know, Christ dipped? I got baptized? Is that what they call it? I don't know. I wanted to say sheep dip, but that's just conspiracy, you know? I'm just like, like, you don't hear how insulting your words are.
I mean,
you can't. Yeah. Process it.
I guess my thing on it is like, okay, they in this is specifically in Abrahamic religions, but Christianity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
They Christianity is the following the teachings of Christ and the, you know, following the actions of being more Christ-like.
Okay.
If someone purports to do that, and they still are like willing themselves, they're still being ignorant to any other ideas or others' experiences or anything on any level at all, that is the exact opposite of following Christ's teachings. So that is like, it's, that is their fault for doing that. Like, you cannot like read about this socialist dude who like threw over fucking tables and like, you know, of money lenders and, like, you know, hung out with, like, whores and fucking, like, criminals and shit, and then somehow think that judging somebody else or, like, you know, not, like, making someone else feel like shit or, like, acting superior to anybody is okay, because that's not at all what happened. And this is not an interpretation of mine. This is what he supposedly
verbatim.
Wrote. It's verbatim, you know?
So, like, I have a question here. Because, like, I have a feeling that this keep going. Are we about to bring in Easter with somebody with a neo-paganist background, an atheist, and Joey right into the Easter hour? We are about to resurrect Christ with this truth. And you know what? I think he would actually fucking listen to this.
I think so as well. I think that this would be a conversation in which he would be completely fine with. I mean, and comfortable and actually contributing, you know?
Yeah. I 100% know he would not be cool with capitalism. He'd be like, nobody listen to me.
I think there was it?
Bring out I the whips. See... Let's fucking do this.
What was it? Like, there's something about, like,
a rich man can get in heaven as easy as a camel and get through the eye of a needle, which I'm going on this rant, even if I got to cut it later. Have you looked into Bible translations? I wrote my high school fucking thesis because my school was fucking ridiculous about papers. I had to write a thesis in order to graduate. Yeah. I wrote my fucking high school thesis on Bible translations. Not because I was into the Bible, but because my English teacher, who was a douche, was a hardcore fanatical Christian. She was a fundamentalist. Yeah. And I was the, you know, let's just say a devout atheist.
Right.
And so I wrote it on Bible translations to rub everything in her fucking face.
Like, nice. That's
that translation. Very oh no, it was fucking great. And she had to give me an A+ because I was like, bitch. But she's like, well, like, she literally, when I got done, she's like, yes, class, that was a great presentation, but just remember other people have other opinions about some of the things that he said. And I was like, fuck you.
Remember, I believe that's what you believe. Your opinion is.
So that's the day I got kicked out. No, but the eye of the needle thing. So I ain't even getting into King James, which, like, you want to get into some fucking shit, you should look into the translation of the Bible, specifically King James, his separation from the church. King James himself being a fucking genius, evil genius, but a fucking genius in terms of being able to understand Abrahamic, like,
weaponizing Abrahamic religion.
Yeah, no, but he understand ancient Hebrew. Okay. He understand ancient Greek. He understood Italian. This dude knew like 15 fucking languages and their ancient roots and versions of it. So he was nice. When King James made the King James version of the Bible, he was in charge of the translation process along with the entire room of folks, which is part of the reason why when they made church and state and yada yada yada, when he put himself at the head, he knocked down an entire section. So there was a part called like Ecclesiastikes or something like that. I don't remember the exact word for it, but in Greek that meant the going out and the shouting of Christ, right? So like part of what Christians were supposed to do was go onto the streets, shout their love of Christ, and come together as a community and speak openly about Jesus, about Christ. That's not a fucking bad thing. They're whatever. They're out there. They're meeting their own kind. He changed that to church.
Yeah.
He centralized power in a place that he could fucking control.
Listen, that's what I'm talking about.
And then on top of that, put the fucking king. But the eye of the needle thing, that fucking translation. Back in the day, at night, in Middle Eastern countries, right? So they would close their gates at night to prevent, you know, raiders and shit like that. And there was one door next to the main gate that everybody could get in through.
Right.
And that door was shaped like this. And it was called the Eye of a Needle, right? Mm-hmm. And it was notorious that when rich folks would come up,
because
their camels loaded up with all their wares and all of their rich shit and all of their goods, and they were stacked up, you know, to the da-da-da-da-da. When a rich person approached at night and the gate was closed, they had to enter in through the eye of the needle. Now, in order to do that, you had to take every fucking material possession off of your camel and walk it through one by one to get into there. That was an expression of when you die, if you are rich, you can't bring your material possessions into heaven. Nope. It was basically this material world is fucking useless.
Right.
And it's going to be incredibly difficult for you to get to heaven the more materialistic you are. You have to go through greater efforts the more that you believe in the material world, the more that you're what would nowadays be a capitalist. It was an anti-capitalist statement. It was just like, hey, actually, poverty makes it easier to enter heaven, bro.
I'm sorry, a little bit of all my sense of it was like an anatized version of things, but like what I meant by like the weaponization of like of Christianity was like in the last instances that you used when you're talking about like how instead of it or it, the focus on Jesus being changed to church, and like that is changing the power structure. If you focus on like and also the divinity of Jesus, like with the Council of Nicaea and all that, was also changing the power structure. You're talking about like Jesus was originally in like the Dead Sea Scrolls sense, like the Gnostic sense, he was a guy. No. Like, he was still like he was that, you know, there was divinity, but he was still just a dude. And like by doing that, you're allotting the power structure of that entire religion to be for the people, not for like any focal point or for any like psychopomp or like any, you know, not for the church basically. And the church really didn't have any, you know, a big part of it was apophasis.
For power.
And that's like when you change that power dynamic, like you're weaponizing it to control the masses. And that's that's what I kind of meant by that.
And that's you're 100%.
But yeah, I had this crisis of faith when I was really young. Because I was very much, you know, I was raised in that, and like I started like asking questions, and it became an issue because they didn't like that I was asking that. I got kicked out of more churches than I can really count, and I started really looking into it. And it's like if you're going to devote your life to something, to like a belief structure, then you really owe it to yourself to really understand where this stuff is coming from. And anybody that may have used your beliefs or tainted your beliefs for their own benefit. And if you don't put in the work, then like you're basically just signing. I mean, for lack of a better explanation, you're just signing your soul over to the devil, you know? Because that's basically what's happening. You're giving away your autonomy. You're allowing somebody else to control you, and that's where we are. And like most of the Abrahamic religions, I'm sure there are still sects because there's the neo-Gnostic sects, but that's still got a little bit weird. But like you know, when they eradicated apophasis from the Christian concept. When they eradicated the concept of apophasis or becoming a god state in yourself, like to be able to reach that. When they took that out, that was a major blow to the religion as well. And that has been I'm pretty sure has been all but removed from most, besides some Kabbalic beliefs of like the Jewish stuff and a lot of the Islamic stuff as well. And they never mentioned, or it's never really thought of as, and it wasn't really a big part, but there was a small community in northern Iraq called what were they called? They were actually one of the oldest, for sure the oldest Abrahamic related religion, but like one of the oldest still like continuously practicing religions in the planet in history. The Yazidi. And they believe that God, like Yahweh God, like abandoned the world, and the peacock God or Lucifer felt pity, and that it's when he fell, he fell because it wasn't really a falling, but he more or less, he felt pity for the people, like in the, you know, their souls and them as creatures and beings. And so he adopted the world and like did what he needed to do to keep it in being in existence. It's fascinating. I would like to understand and know a lot more, but like since they've been all but eradicated at this point in time, because ISIS recently just took out like almost all of them as sex slaves and a bunch of shit. There's a lot of missing pieces and stuff. And I don't know how we got on the subject, but it's interesting. I never get to talk about this stuff, so it's
probably not my fault. Joey's just sitting back like, yes, Gil, it was 100% here. He's like, I deal with this every week.